नारायणस्मृत्याम् नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरय नस्तप्रयसद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया। भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नास्तिके। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 71 and Text 11. Please repeat. Shri Shuka Uvacha,
Shri Shuka Uvacha,
Idi Utva Vacho Rajan,
Idi Utva Vacho Rajan,
Sarvato Bhatra Machuram,
Sarvato Bhatra Machuram,
Devarishir Yadu Vrittascha,
Devarishir Yadu Vrittascha,
Krishnascha Pratya Pujayan, Shuka Uvacha, Iti Uddhava Vacho Rajan, Sarvato Bhadram Achyutam, Devarishi Yadu Vrittascha, Krishnascha Pratyapujayan, Shuka Uvacha, Iti Uddhava Vacho Rajan, Sarvato Bhadram Achyutam, देवऋषिर्यदु वृत्ताश्च कृष्णस्य प्रत्यपूजयन्। Translation and purport by Sri A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Please repeat the translation. Shukadeva Goswami says, O King, Devarishi Narada, the Yadu elders, and Lord Krishna, all welcome Uddhava's proposal, which is entirely auspicious and infallible. Papa, Srila Sridhara Swami explains that the term Achyutam indicates that Uddhava's proposal was fortified by logical reasoning. Furthermore, Shukadeva Goswami specifically indicates by the term Yadu Vriddaha that it was the senior members, not the junior ones, who welcomed the proposal. Young princes such as Aniruddha did not like Uddhava's proposal, since they were eager to fight Jarasandha's army immediately. Namaste Sarasvati Gauravani Pachani Vishesh Suni Prasadhi Sani Jashri Kuchi Chaitanya Prabhumitinam Sri Veda Garada Susari Gaur Bhaktanda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama. This chapter that known as The Lord Travels to Indraprastha. Now Indraprastha, the two capitals at that time, Hastinapur and Indraprastha. Hastinapur is what is known as today's Delhi. Then it was known as Hastinapur because Lord of Hastin means elephants. Lord of elephants were roaming in that place, so it was known as Hastinapur. And when they before the battle took place, when they divided after the gambling, and the Pandavas given some sort of good for nothing place, and the Pandavas built Indraprastha there. And Indraprastha was so beautiful that it was even much greater than Hastinapur. And the Lord is traveling to Indraprastha. Now, what's happening in this particular chapter, for those of you who are new here today, is Uddhava is a very close associate friend and also most importantly a very intimate devotee of Lord Krishna. In fact, Lord Krishna's final instructions to Uddhava itself is known as Uddhava Gita. There are 38 Gitas. Everybody knows about the Bhagavad Gita, but there were 38 Gitas But none of them, of course, are equal to the Lord's celestial song or the Bhagavad Gita itself. So the Bhagavad Gita, you know, suddenly when you say, oh, there are so many Gitas, and you know, you're trying to preach, and then when you give a Gita, especially now that you're selling books, and somebody says, ah, there are so many Gitas, and then you don't get jammed what to say. But none is equivalent to the Bhagavad Gita. There is Brahma Gita, there are so many Gitas. Anyway, now what I'm trying to say here is, Uddhava is a very close friend and devotee of the Lord, and Uddhava is instructing or telling the Lord what to do. Now this is a very, very unique phenomena in our so-called Hindu religion or Vedic religion. Basically what it means is, when you become servant of the Lord becomes your servant. Now many want to go, that seems to be a very healthy sign of a contract. But how much are we willing to really surrender and become the servant of Krishna? So, but that's why even like in the battlefield itself, Arjuna is telling Krishna, Krishna takes his chariot to the, you know, in between the forces. And he says, yes sir, and he's doing a driver's job. Now similarly here Uddhava, because he's such a close devotee of the Lord, is instructing, but actually this instruction is coming from the Lord himself. As the Paramatma seated in everyone's heart, the Lord is prompting Uddhava. And it is Krishna's plan, of course, but it's coming from Uddhava, ultimately. And what's happening? What is the plan? The plan is, because there's a Rajasuya sacrifice going on in Indraprastha, so Uddhava says, you must go for the Rajasuya, go kill Jarasandha, who has been giving so much of trouble, and release the kings who have been held in prison by Jarasandha. So these are three things. So here in this particular verse it says that Krishna welcomed Uddhava's proposal, and which was also welcomed by the Yadu elders. Which means the elders agreed to the proposal, but the youngsters, the young Turks, they were not happy. They said, why waste time, you know, with this proposal? Because he says, you go to the kingdom of Magadha, and you know, he's giving a plan what to do. He said, no, don't waste time. Take the army, go now, defeat that guy once and for all. Now, before understanding further about this particular pastime or Leela, I just want to give you an overview of what's happening. The Vedas, this faith is based on the Vedas. The Vedas are the law books. And it's very difficult to understand the Vedas. Only lately, of course, you can buy. If you go to Bansalal, Motilal Bansalas in Bombay or Calcutta or Delhi, you can actually buy Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, some very big books. Maybe you need two people to turn one page. Now, it is very difficult to understand the Gita. The Vedas are not easy to understand. Now, expounding the Vedas are what is known as the Upanishads, the Brahma Sutras, and the Bhagavad Gita. Now, these three are as good as the law books themselves, and they hold a special position in the Vedic religion. They are known as Prasthana Traya, most important three texts. Which means if anybody comes to you with an argument, and if you can quote from the Upanishad, Brahma Sutras, or the Gita, that's it. I mean, if he has got some knowledge and he says, look, the Gita says so, then he has to surrender. But of course, these days, you know, you can do anything. You can even take the book and hit on his head, he will not surrender. So, but what scholarly persons, we have to understand that this is the law book, and the law books are expounded in three categories. Now, the Puranas are law journals. Now, what we are reading is a Purana. In the law journal, what happens is, here, firstly, what are the Puranas? There are 18 Puranas. And of the 18 Puranas, and each Purana has got an Upapurana as well. Each one has got 18 Upapuranas, not one. And each Upapurana has got 18 Upakhyanas. For instance, we have, like in the Padma Purana, there is Padma Upakhyana. In the Padma Upakhyana, that's where you understand, like the story of Tirupati. You know, like, Bhrigu goes to Vaikuntha, and then he kicks the Lord, and then Lakshmi gets very angry, curses Bhrigu, then she feels sorry that she kicked him, then she comes back to this material world, and she is meditating. Now all that story will be found in the Upakhyana. Upakhyanas, like if Upapuranas are supplementary histories, and Upakhyanas are stories, detailed stories, and how did these detailed stories come about? Somebody, some rishi or saint, was deeply absorbed in one particular pastime. For instance, Balaji, Tirupati. And then what happens is the Lord reveals more information. There is revelation. And when they have this revelation, and that is, what do you call, written in books and for our pleasure, it's given to us. So this is how it is. So the law journals, the Puranas are the law journals, which means, like the law books say, these are the law, you have to follow the law. The law journals will say, those who followed the law, what happened to them? Those who didn't follow the law, what happened to them? So by reading this, like when we read this, now we are talking about Jarasandha, we are talking about Uddhava. Uddhava is full of the Lord's laws. And Jarasandha is one person who is not, is in fact, he is so envious, he is fighting the Lord, he wants to kill the Lord. 18 times he attacked Mathura. That is the story. Now so here, so that is a basic understanding. Now what is the most important thing is, that whatever we are practicing, they should follow this Vedic literature. There is a statement, and I think it's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, I think, by Rupa Goswami, if I'm not mistaken, which is Smriti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatram, Vidhi, Veena. If whatever practice we are doing does not follow these Shrutis and Smritis and Puranas and Pancharatra, then he says that kind of worship only brings disturbance into society. So, and Prabhupada gives a very simple explanation. A man writes a letter and he's writing to a friend in the UK. He writes a letter, closes it, and he goes to the corner of his street, and there is a red pillar box, and he throws his letter into the pillar box. And then weeks later, his friend in England gets a letter. So another man watches it. What is this? You write a letter, put it in an envelope, and then just throw it into a red letter box. So he said, I'll do that. I got a friend in America. So he writes a letter. He goes and builds his own little red box. And then he places the letter there. And then 6 months later, the letter is still remaining there. Because it's not authorized. The other one is authorized by the postal department. And this one is not authorized by anybody. A group of people can get together. That's what's happening to today's Hinduism. A group of computer guys can get together and can build a temple and put an IBM there, and you know, these days just call a Brahmin and say, do puja, he will do. How much are you paying me monthly? He said, okay, pay $1,000, he's very happy. You can put any donkey there, he will still do the puja. And then don't be surprised, a big crowd will come and pray. That's it. Boy, this is the one. The IBM computer is the one that is giving me money, that is doing everything for money. I prayed to God, he never came. But the computer is giving me everything. Now, I'm just saying that, you know, that it is, that this is what is happening. Of course, I'm grossly exaggerating. But it's not also exaggerating. For instance, even in Vrindavan, where the Goswamis have the temple, lately, what they did to Krishna, they dressed him up with a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, took away his flute, and gave him a mobile phone. This is hip, you know, this is what, monkey. And people were attracted, yeah, this is nice. And of course, there was so much of furor in Vrindavan, and they had to quickly, you know, they had to remove all that and put on the whatever attire that, you know, Krishna was. So we have to understand, whatever we may follow, so many practices are going around in the name of Hinduism. We have to be careful whether it's authorized or unauthorized. Most importantly, transcendental topics are very difficult to understand. People just can't understand, especially in this particular age. The foundation or the basis of the Vedic philosophy is law of karma and reincarnation. That's very, people just can't, very difficult for people to understand law of karma and reincarnation. People might say, the other day it rained heavily in Queensland, and I read in the papers, good karma, rained heavily. They use those words, but you know, that's all, you know, good karma, raining heavily in Queensland. But more than that, they're not going into details about it. Now, it is difficult to understand. There was a great cardinal. This cardinal was asking Prabhupada a lot of questions. About this and he was so passionate. Being, you can actually see it in the videotape. And Prabhupada was very relaxed and yes. And he's smiling and answering all the time. And finally this man says, but Prabhupada, it is so difficult to understand reincarnation. So Prabhupada says, animals can't understand, but I'm trying. You know, I think, which means, this man is a beast, he can't understand. So even if it's a learned cardinal of a very important faith, he finds it so difficult to understand. So how so will it be for ordinary people? And especially in this particular age, everybody, there is some kind of intoxication going on. It's either power. Today is the general elections. Why is there so much of a thing? You know, if you get a position, then you know you get a lot of power. That's why the whole hype is about that. And then there is so much of intoxication going on. I mean, you won't believe it. Children are born intoxicated. Babies are born because the mother is a drug addict. She's born drugged. 24 to 48 hours, and then you see the baby screaming away, wondering why. Just screaming and screaming and screaming because the baby wants its fix. And we do that. So we give the fix. We give the fix. Only thing is, it is controlled fix, little by little. Because, you know, of course it's bad, but if you don't give the babies, you know, it's just crying away to death. And then what they do is, in a reduced stage, it takes about a month, every day you give little dose and slowly reduce with some sedation. I mean, that's a young, 13-year-old girls, they come and sit in front of, you know, they come and say, I am stressed out, I am depressed, I can't sleep. The word stress, I only read in physics, stress and tension and all that. I never heard of this so-called stress, only much later, maybe in 40 years or 45 years. I mean, small kids are talking about stress and depression, and they want medication for it. And they can come and tell you, that medication that you gave me last time was not so good. Can you give me something better? I mean, it is that, you know, this has become so bad, that to understand transcendental topics, if you want to understand transcendental topics, at least your mind must be a little bit alert. Then how can you understand? There were two guys, that reminds me of a very funny story, two guys who were, you know, what you call is pub crawling, drinking, you know, and they want a change of environment. You know, the same place, you drink, and then, you know, it's not so good, so they go to the next pub. And they crawled out of the country, out of the country means to the countryside. And then finally they thought they had enough, then they said, okay, let's go back. So they were coming back. So while coming back, the first fellow asked the other one, because when you're coming back, there were a lot of thuds, you know, the car was going, and there was a lot of thud, there was noise. So the first fellow asked the second guy, hey, are we reaching town? So the other guy said, I think so. We are knocking a lot of people, so we must be reaching town. So this guy said, the first guy said, hey, in that case, you better slow down. So the second guy said, what do you mean slow down? You are the one who's driving. So if they are so drunk, and when they are so drunk, I mean, if it is how to understand transcendental, it's just impossible. I've tried to even to, with Indians, I've tried to preach. It's so difficult, especially when they come here. It's very difficult. They put some kind of a block. They just don't want to listen. You know, no. I'm in Australia. I've got my clients. Don't disturb my clients. Now, talking about transcendental topics, the Vedas talk about two important activities. This is known as the Pravritti Marg and Nivritti Marg. Now, Pravritti Marg means positively engaging in activities. And Nivritti Marg means those who are frustrated with this engagement and they say, look, I don't want renunciation. They want to renounce. Now, this goes on. Now you'll find that, you know, this so-called people, they're positively engaging people, Pravritti Marg. They've done all kinds of things, skyscrapers and nuclear bombs and name it. They've done so many things. But most of it, I mean, you know that it's global warming and so many other problems. But when we try to interfere with the material nature, there is always a backlash. And the backlash is happening all the time. Now some of them of course come to the realization that there is a problem, and then what happens is they are frustrated, and when they are frustrated they take up this process called Nivritti Marg or renunciation. Now both these two margs or paths I explain. Why the Pravritti Marg is considered as Palabhajana, which means, bhajana means in absorption, even we call ourselves bhajan. But so in absorption, in the Pravritti Marg is absorbed in the result. Pala bhajana. Pala means result or fruit. Fruit of his activity. Whatever you try for, and then when you get it, and he is absorbed in that. Whereas the other person, he is very, very absorbed in his renunciation. Though he looks externally, he looks very good. This person is so much into it. And this guy is not into it at all. So you think, oh, this is very great. That's Nivritti Marg is a very nice place. I mean, that's a nice pathway for us. But the thing is, though he is not engaged in such positive activities, he is also attached to his non-attachment. He's attached to his non-attachment. I don't know how much that makes sense to you. But that is alright. But then he has a very secret desire. His secret desire is that he's going to become God. That is the pitfall of the Nivritti Marg. So between this smoke, of course, beyond this is what is known as the Bhakti Marg, or what we call as Bhakti Bhajana. Here, the devotee is totally absorbed. He is totally absorbed in the service of the Lord. He just exists for the Lord's sake. That's all. You know, like, especially those 10 temple devotees who spend the time here, they are all the time absorbed in only, in the service to the Lord. Whatever Krishna eats, and then the remnants they eat, and then they go out and distribute books, and, you know, the whole lifestyle is a life of dedication just to Krishna himself. So that is what is called as Bhakti Bhajana. So externally speaking, sometimes the Bhakti Bhajana or the Bhakti Marg may appear to be Nivritti also, because we are not into material activities. So it looks as if that we are also like renounced people, but we are not. It is not renunciation, because we actively engage in the service of the Lord. So it is said, the Vedas very clearly say that the Bhakti Marg is the topmost. Even in today's modern world, you know, you can see people who I can give you two celebrities just like that. You've heard of Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is into this Scientology. That means they think science is the one that can give answers to all our problems. Isn't it? Modern science, education, and medicine, and the discoveries, and airplanes, and all that, you know. So modern science is the one that gives answers to all of our day-to-day problems. So they believe in what is known as Scientology. Now, then we have people like Richard Gere, I don't know if it's Gere or Gere, but he is into the Dalai Lama. They say, oh, Dalai Lama, oh, look at the Dalai Lama, he's renounced, oh, he's so serene, and look at his face, he's so peaceful. But it's the same thing, you know, this renunciation, which is also with the Buddhist concept, the Maya concept is to become one with God, and the Buddhist concept is to become none with God. You know, they want to merge into the mud of the Garbha ocean or something, because for them ultimately there is nothing. So they're just wiping the whole thing of the spiritual pastime. They're just simply negating the whole thing. Now we come into here, he says in this purport, Sridhara Swami. Now in this particular chapter, Sridhara Swami has been quoted many times. I've just said that before, but I want to repeat this again because it's very important. When I first started reading, I thought Sridhara Swami was our Sridhara Swami, the Jolly Swami, some of you know, the American Swami. I thought, you know, he was writing his commentary. He said, I didn't know. I mean, frankly, I didn't know. Then I thought, because Prabhupada, you know, before he left, he said his godbrother is also known as Sridhara Swami. He is the founder of the Chaitanya Saraswat Math. And he said, if you have any doubts, you can talk to him. Just like Prabhupada, there was Gaudiya Math, Bhaktisan Swami. And then Prabhupada actually went away and he created his own ISKCON. Similarly, there is this Sridhara Swami who also left Gaudiya Math and formed this Chaitanya Saraswat Math, which is next to Mayapur. So I thought it was that, but actually it is not. I was just thinking it one of them, and I just left it like that. But much later I found out, this Sridhara Swami is the earliest scholar, Vedic scholar, well before Adi Sankara, Sankaracharya. He was way ahead. Now he, in his commentary, he wrote a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he in his commentary talks about the difference between Jiva and Krishna, the individual soul and Krishna, and he also talks about the oneness, which means he was a propounder of the Advaitin as well as the Dvaitin philosophy. Now this is very important. So what happens is, you get Sankara scholars or Mayavadi scholars quoting Sridhar Swami, and you get the Dvaitins or the Bhakti scholars who also quote Sridhar Goswami, just like we are Sridhar Swami, just like we are quoting Sridhar Swami, they also quote Sridhar Swami. So I want you to understand that he talked about the similarity between God and the soul, he also talked about the difference. But in his commentary, he very clearly says that Krishna is Parabrahman, Krishna is God. And so the Sankarites at that time, they were not known as Sankarites, they refused to accept his commentary. But then again they could not refute, because he was such a scholar, they couldn't refute his arguments. So it became a problem. So what they said is, okay, we will accept your commentary. This is a very interesting story. We will accept your commentary if Lord Shiva accepts it. So this whole thing was happening in Banaras, because Banaras is the seat of impersonalist philosophy. And so they said, okay, we will take your commentary and leave it in Vishwanath's temple overnight. And then we'll see what happens the next morning. If Shiva accepts it, see, they always give you a very tough test. If Shiva accepts, we will accept. You see? So what happened? They left the commentary and they closed the door. Next morning they opened it. And the book was opened on a particular verse which says, Aham Vedim Shukate Veti and Vyasa Veti Na Veti. I don't want to go to details, but it says, Shiva says, I have understood. So because Shiva himself says, I have understood, and then the scholars had to accept it. Now there is an interesting twist to this, Sridhar Swami in our line. You have heard of the Panchatattva, and you know all know about Gadadhara Pandit. So Gadadhara Pandit was the guru of Vallabhacharya. This many people don't know, and sometimes the followers don't accept it also. Now Vallabhacharya, as you know, is the founder of the Pushti Marg, that is the Ladu Gopal and the whole thing. Now when he wanted to take initiation from Gadadhara Pandit, and he had to speak to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu said, don't give him initiation. That's a serious thing. And you know why? Because Vallabha rejected Sridhara Swami's commentary. Because he rejected, he said, don't give him initiation. And Vallabha was going on and on, and finally, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually relented. And then he said, alright, he gave him permission to give this initiation. Because one may ask why, but because he's going to expand the whole thing to the Achintya Bhedaveda Sattva philosophy, so he can explain all this together. So that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agreed. Now coming back to Jarasandha, this particular thing, with just a few minutes of the pastime. So Jarasandha attacked Mathura 18 times. Now who is this Jarasandha? As you all know, he was born out of, the father did not have a child for many years, and he gave very, very expensive jewels and all that to a particular rishi. And the rishi gave a mango, and he said, alright, you want a son, take this one. So he took the mango, he had two wives, he cut the mango into two halves, gave each half to the wives, and they both took half. And what did they produce? 9 months later, there was half a body here and half a body there. So, and the palace physicians were confused, they thought this must be some kind of an abortion, some kind of work of some rakshasas, and they threw these two half bodies into the forest. And there comes Jara. Jara is a giantess, and she comes and looks at the two bodies and keeps them together, and they become one. And because Jara puts these two people together, and he was called Jarasandha. Now Jarasandha is also the father-in-law of Kamsa. He is also the teacher of Kamsa. So what happens is, when Kamsa was killed by Krishna, he is very angry, because his two daughters, Asti and Prapti, the two daughters, were crying, came to the father and crying, look, you know, Krishna killed our husband. So he wanted to take revenge. So that's why he's attacking. He's a great Kshatriya. So he attacked. In the first attack itself, Balram caught him and wanted to kill him. But Krishna said, no, don't kill him. It's not the time for him. So sometimes people say that Krishna ran away to Dwaraka because he couldn't handle Jarasandha. That is not true. Jarasandha was... Krishna wanted to, this is all Leela, you have to understand why he is doing. And so 18 times he attacked. And then finally, what happened was, this is the plan that was hatched by Uddhava. Uddhava said, now we are going for the Rajasuya and Indraprastha. You also go to Jarasandha's place. Go as Brahmana. See, why the young fellows were not happy with this plan. He says, go like Brahmanas. And then you go and beg. Beg for what? Beg for a fight. Because otherwise, you know, otherwise single combat is going to be difficult. And what is you beg for fight? Single combat. And then will he give? Yes. If a Brahmana asks, he will give. If you go as a Kshatriya, he won't. So it's a small play. So they go there, and then Jarasandha treats them, because they're three great Brahmanas, Krishna, Arjuna, and Bhima. And Jarasandha treats them very nicely. But both of them do not speak. Arjuna and Bhima are not speaking. Only Krishna is speaking. And Krishna explains, they are observing Mauna Vrata, a vow of silence, so they won't speak. And then he said, so till when? He said, till midnight. Oh, so if I come after midnight, can I speak? Yes, sure. You come after midnight, you can speak to them. And so, you know, Jarasandha is a decent guy that way. He goes away, comes back in the middle of the night, and is everything okay? And then that's when they say, fight. And then he says, okay, choose one of us. And then he knows that. They said, I am Krishna, he is Bhima, Arjuna. Now whom do you want to fight with? Then he felt that Arjuna was not a stature. Krishna, as far as he is concerned, is just a, you know, he is not even a Kshatriya. You know. This guy is a playboy, he is just a cowherd, he is not even one of the Varnashram, he is just a useless guy. Anyway, Bhima, of course, is a big fighter. So there is a fight between Bhima and him. And every time Bhima kills him, his two parts, he come back together. So that's why it was very difficult to kill him. And as you all know, and Bhima is looking at Krishna, now what do? You know, every time I tear this into pieces, he comes together. I can't kill him. Then Krishna takes a leaf and he tears the leaf this way and it goes in different direction. So, and then Bhima now understood. He puts his foot on this thing, tears him into two pieces and throws them to the opposite direction so that they could not be get together. So that's the pastime of Jarasandha. Now, sometimes you might think, you know, maybe this, Jarasandha, this is a punishment, maybe, you know, like too much, or some people might be, or too complicated, why Krishna like this, like that. But this is not so complicated. If you want real complication, the real complication is the treatment of Aswatthama. Aswatthama, I want to say here about, you know why, because his story is even more intriguing. From the beginning itself, the father was Dronacharya, and Dronacharya and Drupada, they were both classmates in a Gurukul. And when they were young, this fellow is a prince and that fellow is a Brahmin. And the prince, of course, you know, he didn't know what to do. I mean, he couldn't wash his clothes or get his food. And this Brahmin boy was helping him. I said, oh look, I'll do all this for you. So the king, the prince said, oh, you're such a good friend. When I become king, one day I'll give you half my kingdom. So, of course, when they're small and they're playing. And sure enough, one day when Drupada became king and Drona became a great archer himself, then he went to see his friend Drupada. He said, now that you are the king, what about my promise? So he said, look, you know, we were small, we are playing kids, you know, we are playing husband and wife, you know, children play husband and wife and cooking and, you know, marriage and stuff like that. So he said, look, you know, it's all small, you know, we did all that. He said, oh, how can you do that? So much later when Drona becomes the teacher for the Pandavas, as Guru Dakshina, he tells the Pandavas, okay, go and fight this fellow, and I want half the kingdom. So, you all know the story. So, when fought, half the kingdom was given to Drona. Now, Drupada couldn't do anything. He had no children. He, of course, he is a Kshatriya. He wants vengeance. He wants to take revenge, but he don't know what, he can't do. He doesn't know what to do. He's weak. So, he calls his priests and all that, and he has this great yajna, fire sacrifice, and he's praying for some progeny who will help. From that pie sacrifice come Draupadi first, and then comes Dhrishtadyumna. Now Dhrishtadyumna, he is, as soon as he also comes born with the, what do you call, a crown protection, you know. He comes like a warrior, and as soon as he comes out of fire, born out of fire, both of them are born out of fire, Draupadi and Dhrishtadyumna. He comes out, he is going straight to the chariot, he is ready to go to battle. That's, you know, he wants to go and kill Dronacharya. That's his birth itself. And the people are roaring, you know, the killer of Drona has come, the killer of Drona has come. So, and then, much later in the battlefield, Drona is killed by Duryodhana, but there is a little bit of deceit there. And we said, because Drona can't be killed, and Asvatthama, the elephant, is dead then. There was a lie that, you all know that story. Anyway, what has happened was, when Drona was killed by Dhrishtadyumna, and when Asvatthama, he's the son of Dronacharya, when he heard that, he was very angry. You kill my father, now I will kill you. So he rushes to the Pandava camp. He wants to kill them. When he goes to the Pandava camp, there's a big ghostly apparition that is protecting the whole camp. A huge thing with fiery red eyes and burning and fire all over the place. And he couldn't get near. So he used all his weapons. He's using. Asvatthama is using all his weapons. And just couldn't destroy this huge thing. And then he's a great devotee of Lord Shiva. So he sits down there and prays and meditates upon Lord Shiva. And then Lord Shiva comes in person. This is the most exciting thing. In person Lord Shiva comes and gives him a sword. And he said, with this sword you can do whatever you want. And the first thing he does is kills that ghostly thing. And then rushes into the camp. And this is Yumna is sleeping. And he kicks him. And when Mr. Yumna wakes up, one slash he kills. He doesn't stop there. He uses the Brahmastra to kill all the children. He's killing children too. Killing this the Divinas, alright. Children. They were children and part that Draupadi's children. He killed all of them using Brahmastra. Not only that, even Parikshit, who was in the womb, and he was also killed. Of course, Krishna revives Parikshit and the rest of the children are gone. So everybody is furious. Everybody's Bhima is furious. Arjuna is furious. Draupadi is so angry. Get him, kill him. And Bhima says, punish him appropriately. And then Krishna says, look, according to rules, he has to be punished. But be careful. He is a guru's son. You have to be careful too. Anyway, Arjuna goes and catches him and brings him to the midst. Where soon as he brought him to the midst, because Asvatthama was like one of them. Our Asvatthama, that's what they called him. Our Asvatthama. Grew up together. So even Draupadi was so angry, when he saw Asvatthama, he told Arjuna, what are you doing? Muchara, muchara. Which means, release me, release him, release him. Muchara, muchara. He's crying. Leave him, don't do it. Don't do anything to him. And Bhima, of course, he was very angry, Kill him, And Krishna said, look, this is a very tricky situation. If you don't kill him, Bhima will be angry. If you kill him, Draupadi also will be angry. You also have to be careful. He's a guru's son. Okay, he has to be punished. So in other words, he's saying, you have to punish, but punish him in the proper way. And then Krishna smiled. You see? So when Krishna smiled, and then Arjuna realized that it's a situation. Then he's also assessing what will happen. If he doesn't kill him, then Bhima will just walk away from his camp. This is walking away, and if Bhima walks away, a big chunk will walk away with him. This walking away is not only happening now in ISKCON, it's happening long time ago. They have already started before. So, and Arjuna was very worried about that. So finally he said, alright, he had to make the decision. And so what he does, Asvatthama was born with a jewel in his head. It's part of his hair and scalp. So he took his sword and nibbled the jewel out. And when he nibbled the jewel out and said, okay, this is your punishment. Now you can roam around and then everybody will know this is the great Asvatthama, and then he killed innocent children, and as a punishment is the jewelism. So that satisfied everybody. Even Bhima was, killing him is no use, it's finished. Now this is like an insult for the rest of his life. He has to live with this insult for the rest of his life. And so why was the thing, we must understand, why was this special mercy given? Even to Asvatthama, not only to Asvatthama, even Jarasandha, because they are associated with Krishna and Arjuna. In fact, Asvatthama was so close. Being Drona's son, Drona used to give special classes for him. And Arjuna, because he was close to Asvatthama, he used to go for the special class. Meant only for the son, only one person was allowed, that is Arjuna. And then there was a rule in the Gurukul. At night, once the sun sets, you can't feed him, can't feed anybody. And Drona will tell Arjuna, go and do this and sends him on some assignment which will take so long to come back. By the time he comes back, it's already so he can't eat. But the reason is that when there is no light, you can't feed it. That's a kind of a rule. Now, but what happens is, Aswatthama, because he had his gem, wherever he goes, he has got his lamp. Which means he's got a torchlight on his head. It'll be good if you go to Mayapur festival. You don't have to buy torchlights. Mayapur festival, all the time there'll be blackouts. And anyway, what he did was, he will come and serve him. And so that way, he was very, very close to the family. And that's what it was. And the story doesn't end there. And then he went away with Vyasa. He's supposed to be roaming for 3,000 years. And he will come back as the next Vyasa. So even till today, people will talk about Aswatthama's punishment. Oh, this is not right. This is not right. Oh, no, he should not have been. Oh, he should have been killed. Or how can he become the next Vyasa? This is going on. Even now it's going on. But that's what it is. The journals tell us that that's what happened. That's how it started. That's what's going to happen. Whether you like it or not, he's the next Vyasa. You can't, it's not like today's elections. You cannot say, I want Kevin Rudd or John Howard. You have to accept Aswatthama as the next Vyasa. I'm already overshot by 5 minutes. It was told to stop exactly at 8. Any comments, questions? Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for patiently.